Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We'll be talking about elderberries and how they can help you if you're overweight. We'll also explore oysters. A lot of people this time of year are eating raw oysters. I wouldn't. They're transmitting a human norovirus, so that's serious. Also today, magnetic stimulation is effective in helping Parkinson's patients walk, and older people are getting smarter, but not fitter. They're living a little longer, but they're a lot sicker than people in previous generations. And those purple potatoes, they pack cancer prevention punch even after cooking. So we have the latest on all levels of health and nutrition, plus how medical marijuana liquid extract can bring hope for children with severe epilepsy. And instant oatmeal for breakfast can help curb your appetite for lunch. So we always have the latest in good science here for you. Then a commentary from Chris Hedges, The Great Unraveling, as appearing in truthdig.com, and The Point of No Return, Climate Change, Nightmares Are Already Here. So we have a lot to share. Plus, we're going to give you some perspectives on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. We're going to take a look at the revolt against the ruling class, and a study that was done in 1976 in Congress, and who came forward as the leading experts to talk about, well, I'll let you hear what they had to say in 1976, and the same type of people using the same talking points are appearing in Congress saying pretty much the same things today. Also, I see that Bernie Sanders is supporting Saudi Arabia. Really? I mean, if anyone took the time to look at his foreign policy support of Israel and Saudi Arabia, well, we'll give you a little bit of why Saudi Arabia is not the country to be supporting on any level. And about, gee, Bernie, did you actually pay attention to who suffered in the last major conflict between Israel and Palestinians? We'll share the real deal with you. So we have a lot on our agenda today. Let's begin. First up, medical marijuana. This is from New York University. And what they're showing here is that a medicinal liquid from the marijuana is showing promises of treatment for children with severe epilepsy that do not respond to other treatments. And this was published in the American Academy of Neurology's annual meeting. And so that's very important because this is a non-toxic, completely natural medicine. And it is rich in the cannabinoids, the component of marijuana that does not include the psychoactive part of the plant that creates a high. There's no high with this. It's just the chemical extract of the plant, and it's taken by mouth daily and with enormous benefit. By the way, there's also enormous benefit with brain cancer, but in this case they were studying seizures, and they were substantially able to reduce the number of seizures by over 54% during a 12-week period. So that's good news. Also, oatmeal. Now, I'm talking about the traditional, really healthy oatmeal. There's three types of oatmeal. The one I would not buy is the kind of instant flakes, because a substantial amount of its basic nutrition has been removed in processing. Well, that's good for people who want something instant because it is instant, but it doesn't have the oat beta-glucan in any qualitative amount that you need. Then you have that which is slightly processed, which is much more nutritious. And then the best of all is the steel cut oats. They're also called Irish oatmeal. Now, this is the one that really has the nutrition. It takes about 5 minutes to get it to loosen up, if you put some hot water over it and just throw a towel over it, let it sit for a while, and then when you take the towel off, this is also true for millet, which is a very tasty grain that very seldom is ever seen. I've never seen it in any restaurants. But you can make a wonderful millet burger with it, and it tastes like almonds. And it's called the poor man's protein in Africa, where it grows, and it's been used for hundreds of years. So it's a little yellow, tiny, tiny little yellow, looking like a BB, but about one-third the size. So anyhow, if you can put some hot water over your millet, put hot water over your still-cut oats, and just stir it around, and then put some cinnamon into both, like an eighth of a teaspoon, which is really good for diabetics and maintaining your blood sugar level, and it's a very healing nutrient. And then you could put some goji berries in, maybe a teaspoon of walnut butter, raw walnut butter would be great, and stir it all around, and just come back to it later, no, maybe 15, 20 minutes later. That's an ideal way of having a breakfast if you want to sustain your blood sugar, if you're pre-diabetic or diabetic. If you want something to keep you from being hungry in mid-morning and going for an unhealthy snack, this will keep you good for about 5 hours. This is from Louisiana State University. This was published in the Journal of the American College of Nutrition. I'll quote it. A new study revealed that your cereal choice at breakfast may have an impact on how much you eat for lunch. And this showed that a hearty bowl of instant oatmeal, that's not what I would recommend, that's why I just gave you the distinction, helped curb food intake at lunch better than a leading oat-based cold cereal, even when each bowl provided the same number of calories. So it's not the calories I care about here. The fact that they were using skim milk and using instant oatmeal when you could use still-cut oats and almond milk and a nut butter and a nice fruit, and you have a really power-packed breakfast. But here's the point. You're creating satiety, and satiety is what keeps you from being hungry from point A to point B, and that's important. Also, from the University of Adelaide, using hot chili peppers can make a big difference in your metabolism. It also impacts your stomach and gives you a sense of fullness. Quote, the stomach stretches when it's full, which activates nerves in the stomach to tell the body that it has had enough food. We found that this activation is regulated through hot chili peppers and their receptors. And this was done at the University of Adelaide School of Medicine. So, why would this happen? It's relatively straightforward. Inside all chili peppers, by the way, which are really good for birds as well, you have a chemical substance, and it's called capsaicin, cap, C-A-P, say, S-A-I, sin, C-I-N. And it's what makes your chili bean hot. And then there's a scale of how hot it is. And it reduces your food intake. Hence, if you want to cut back on eating, but you don't really have the discipline, and once you start to eat, you don't know how to turn it off and put your fork and spoon down. So this is one of the ways that you can start with an appetizer, let's say soup or a salad. Then have your hot chili pepper. And you can actually get capsules, and it tells you the heat index. Now, some will say very hot, and that's your best. That's about 75,000 heat units. Now, mind you, it's not going to burn you. It actually heals. It heals ulcers. It thins your blood. It helps space your red blood cells. It helps prevent strokes. It increases microcirculation to your brain. In fact, it's one of the best things in the world you can take before you go to bed at night to help prevent a stroke while you're sleeping. That, coenzyme Q10, and vitamin E and vitamin C, three of the best things in the world for your heart, your circulation, your endothelium. So if you're overweight, if you have a tendency to overeat, then simply take one or two of your hot chili capsules, and now your stomach will have a sensation of being full. Your brain will then tell you, we're full, stop eating. And hence, you won't get those extra and unnecessary calories. I believe that everyone should be having elderberry extract every morning. Quite simply, it is one of the single most important natural healing berries on the planet. And it's not used in the United States at all. It used to be. My great-grandparents used it, but no one I know uses it at all today. And yet here's this mighty little berry, it's a little tiny berry, and it looks much like a black currant. I grow them. In fact, I have a whole fence full of them. And I go over, I must have, I don't know, in season, they're in season right now, in fact. The whole seasons are mixed up right now. Normally loquats, which are a wonderful little egg-sized shaped fruit, originally from China, then taken to Italy, and they're known as an Italian fruit, but they're actually not from Italy. And they have a yellow, little thin flesh underneath and a big bunch of seeds. So you eat that little flesh, but there's so many that come out on a tree. It's easy to get 1,000 on a tree. And normally they come out in March for about 3 weeks. Now they're coming out in August and again in January. I'm seeing all these cycles off on all forms of fruit. That's how hot it's been, and how this hot in the summer and having very cold or very hot winters change the cycle of the plants. In any case, the elderberries are consistent. They grow from generally June through September, and you'll get bunches of them. I mean, like thousands upon thousands upon thousands. You could fill a whole cereal bowl every day, which I do because it's very good for the birds and for the other animals. It's great for animals. I make a smoothie each morning that I give the animals. In fact, I make sure my dogs and cat get this before they get the regular food. And with animals, the raw food that they get is what they eat in nature. And the reason that a lot of animals don't live long in the wild is because of how polluted the water is and the impact of those parasites in the water upon their liver and their heart and their kidneys. That's why the same identical animal in captivity, unfortunately, I'm not talking about in a zoo, but let's say in a sanctuary where it has a natural habitat, it can double or even triple its lifespan if it's given clean water. It's also true for humans as well, by the way. People think they can just drink anything and it doesn't impact their health. It does, especially those high fructose corn syrup sodas really devastate your liver. That's why non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is a pandemic, not an epidemic, a pandemic in the United States. And yet you don't hear a single word by anyone about it because you have too many powerful corporations that would immediately have their lobbyists called and says, such and such senator or the president or the attorney general or surgeon general was going to say something about high fructose corn syrup and that's going to impact our market. And suddenly these people get a call and you'd stop it. I know that for a fact because it actually happened to me when I was on PBS in Washington, D.C. for my fifth original program. I've done 35 now original programs on PBS stations. And it was a very successful presentation. The station manager, the new station manager, loved it. He had come from being program director in Detroit, very nice guy. And he came over afterwards. He said, we just got a call from Sharon Rockefeller, who heads the local station board. And she had gotten a call from the sugar people who said, don't have him back on because I was pouring sugar out of a bag showing how much the average kid eats in America each day. And it's 40 teaspoons a day. And those statistics came from the USDA. And the bag had been poured by David Slater, my in-house attorney, and measured on a gram scale and then sealed. So when I opened the bag and was showing, this is how much sugar that you're eating without even being aware of it because it's hidden in foods. And it turns out, I didn't know, that Sharon Rockefeller sits on the board of Pepsi-Cola, one of the largest users of high fructose corn syrup and sugar in the world. So And then you start to look at who sits on the board of all these PBS stations. And it's frequently either very orthodox physicians aligned with the pharmaceutical industry, or it's major business people like Henry Kravitz, the man who has caused millions of people to lose their job, who sat for years as president of PBS board Channel 13. Why are they on these boards? Simple. They can write the checks, or they can get others to write checks. Just like, why do you think they're on the board of one of my high school friends who is now retired, was one of the top people at the Museum of Modern Art for a long time. And one time we had a conversation, and I said, why are all these people are culturally illiterate? They have no real knowledge of the artists of different periods. And this person said, it's very simple. Do you have any idea how much money you have to be able to contribute or paintings you have to donate at any museum to get inside? That's how it works today. And I did some investigation. It's true. So nothing is ever quite what it seems. Now we get back to the Elderberry. But the Elderberry is everything it seems to be. It is one of the most perfect healing fruits in the world. This is from the University of Connecticut. A major study, quote, black elderberry extract may improve obesity-related metabolic disturbances like triglyceride levels, inflammation, and insulin resistance. This research from the University of Connecticut said dietary anthocyanidins have been shown to reduce inflammation in animal models and to improve obesity-related complications. And black elderberry, which is, by the way, it's called Sambucus, Sambucus, nigra, nigra, was one of the richest sources of these type of flavonoids. Quote, overall, black elderberry extract appeared to attenuate systemic inflammation and insulin resistance that occurs with diet-induced obesity. And that means, and this was published in the British Journal of Nutrition, it means it could turn it off. Now think of what needs to be turned off as far as inflammation. Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, ALS, cancer, diabetes, all forms of heart disease, fibromyalgia, arthritis, glaucoma, macular degeneration, and cataracts. All these are inflammatory. So that's one reason each day to have your elderberry extract. Now, just a few other quick things here. Oysters, according to Shanghai Ocean University, oysters not only transmit the human norovirus, they also serve as a major reservoir for these pathogens. And this is published in Applied and Environmental Microbiology, the Journal of the American Society of Microbiology. Quote, more than 80% of human norovirus genotypes were detected in oyster samples or oyster-related outbreaks. The results highlight oysters' important role in the persistence of norovirus in the environment and its transmission to humans. So, the takeaway message, if you don't want this really serious, even deadly virus, give up the oysters. Besides, raw oysters are just, to me, they're just gross looking. I mean, they open this whole cut. It looks like someone's had a really bad head cold and discharged it onto a shell and someone's eating it. Really gross. So give it up. And finally, from University School of Medicine, Seoul, Korea, magnetic stimulation effective in helping Parkinson's patients walk. About 50% of patients with Parkinson's disease experience freezing of gait, an inability to move forward while walking. This can affect not only mobility, but also balance. And in this study published in Restorative Neurology and Neuroscience, researchers report that repetitive transcranial magnetic stimulation, that's like a TMS, can reduce fog and improve other motor skills in these Parkinson's patients. So electrical stimulation, and especially magnetic electrical stimulation. And the International Institute for Applied Systems Analysts quote, older populations are scoring better on cognitive tests than people the same age in the past, but they're suffering far more conditions because they're not fit. This was published in PLOS One. So what this means in just lay language is we have people who are living a little older, but they're not healthy. They're sicker because they're not taking care of themselves. And finally, the purple potato. This is from Pennsylvania State University. Quote, anthocyanin compounds found in purple potatoes may help to preserve the body's ability to enhance immune resistance of cancer, even after cooking. This is published in the Journal of Nutritional Biochemistry. So you want to help if you have cancer anywhere in the body? Why don't you start eating purple potatoes? They're delicious, by the way. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and nutrition. Let's take a break, and we'll be back in a moment. Please stay with us.
There's a woman that's here with end-stage multiple sclerosis. Was basically written off by the medical community, my colleagues. And she comes from a family that's... many of her family members are physicians in traditional medicine, and was given no options other than make the best out of the rest of her life. And since I've been here, when she first got here, she couldn't walk. She was in a wheelchair. She couldn't move her legs. And each day she started progressing, and by the end of the retreat, not only was she not in a wheelchair, she was walking with a walker, and then at the very end of the retreat, she was able to walk without a walker, and it's nothing short of a miracle. And I would love if the rest of the medical community could at least witness some of this and start to use it in their practice. And I'm so happy to see these patients getting better.
Were you diagnosed with end-stage multiple sclerosis?
Yes, I was diagnosed with MS 23 years ago.
23 years, mm-hmm. And it's progressively gotten worse.
It's got worse in the last 13 years.
Okay. In the last 13 years, were you given any hope that somehow this would slow down or improve or you get better?
No.
All right.
I was told by my neurologist some years ago, when he saw me walking with a crutch, he says, "You're still walking, you'll soon be on a wheelchair." And I'm still, for the last 8 years, I'm still walking with my walker.
Okay. When you came here, coming from an Orthodox family background of all doctors, were you able to bend your knees?
No. I couldn't bend my knees when I walked in here.
How long had your knees been frozen stiff?
It's been like this for about 5 years now.
5 years.
Mm-hmm.
When you went from your room to the dining room, which is about... 200 feet, did you have to have Charles lift up and put down each foot, right foot, left foot, right foot, left foot?
That's right. That's what we did the first day when I got here, and he had to help me, and I was very excited to have somebody around to help me for the few time they were going to be here.
When you were walking with the crutch, the walker, and Charles lifting and putting down
your feet,
and your cousin assisting you on the side.
That's it.
How many times did you have to stop in that walk?
Oh, many times I had to stop. I can't remember exactly how many times, but Shane, it was very sweet of him to make sure there was a chair for me to sit down because I was so weak on my legs.
Okay. Now it's 3 weeks have passed. Yesterday, in front of everyone, did you by yourself, with no assistance, stand up out of your chair?
Yes, that's right.
And with no cane or walker, were you able to lift your knees up and down in the air?
That's right. That's correct.
Were you able to take some steps unassisted, no cane or walker, towards me?
That's right. That's exactly what I did.
So you came without being able to move a leg, with no knee movement at all. You couldn't raise a foot. Your feet were swollen. Are your feet swollen?
That's right. But I've been having this swollen legs for many, many months now back in South Africa. And since I've come here, I don't have any swelling.
You also had bowel problems. Do you have bowel problems now?
No, I don't have it at all.
Okay.
Oh, I had bowel movements from home, but it's done so much good for me with all the right, correct food that I've been eating here.
Did you think you would ever be able to stand alone and take a step?
No, I didn't think I would be able to do that.
Did anyone in the medical community say that it was possible?
No.
How are you going to approach your doctors? And right beside you, you have a physician who saw this. You also had a physician, an oncologist from Pittsburgh, one of America's foremost oncologists
here. That's right.
She sat with people who had terminal cancer.
Yes.
And who were making improvements.
Yes.
What did she say? Because you two were speaking.
Well, when I spoke to her, I told her about my illness. But when she got the news that I'm doing so well since she last had seen me, she's very excited and happy for me.
Do you believe that your medical community will pay attention to what you've done when you go home and you're the only person that I know of who's had end-stage multiple sclerosis could actually regain their ability to stand unassisted and walk?
I think they're all going to be surprised and shocked and excited for me because they're all good friends of my late husband who I lost 6 months ago. So they'll be very excited to see that I had this progress.
How do you feel today?
I'm very pleased with myself. I'm glad that I met a person like Gary who's given me a lot of encouragement on my health. And I hope in the future I'd like to come back to his next retreat to see if I can have much more improvement than what I have now.
Remember, you're the one who made the improvement.
Yes.
Never give that power to anyone else or mm-hmm. credit mm-hmm. because you're the one who had to make the change.
That's right. That's true.
Have you seen other people change?
Yes, I did quite a few others change as well. Not in my illness, but other illnesses that have been taking place here. I've seen others who have improved their quality of life as well.
And yet, when you arrived, I said, I'm not a doctor. I'm not here to diagnose or treat anyone. We're here to focus upon the exchange of negative energy for
positive energy.
That's do you understand
true.
What
that's,
that means
that's,
now?
I do.
Good. Well, we wish you all the best when you
thank
go back
you.
To South Africa.
I'd like to thank Gary, and I'd like to thank Luann as well, who's been, they've been so kind to me, and of course the group of friends that I've had met here, giving me excellent treatment out here. It's been like being at home in South Africa. I've been here for 3 weeks, and I've had an excellent stay out here. Thank you. Bye.
That was a person who, the first person that spoke was a person who's an Orthodox board-certified physician that chose to come out of curiosity to see what actually happens at a retreat. There was another ultra-Orthodox physician, one of the most respected oncologists in America, who just uses chemotherapy, who's also a professor at one of the major cancer hospitals and universities. And they spent this time talking with these seriously ill people. Mind you, the whole purpose of the retreat was as a fundraiser for our sister station, New York, WBAI, and we were able to raise them thousands of dollars. A lot of people contributed a lot of time and energy to make that happen. So sometimes it's more than just detoxifying and rejuvenating and relaxing and being close to nature and rebalancing yourself. Sometimes if people align their energies, wonderful things can happen. And you just heard of one of those. But there's even a more remarkable, there's four more, actually more remarkable things from people. And maybe we'll have little clips from them. And I received a letter from the physician, one of the physicians. And again, they remained anonymous. They didn't want anyone to know who they were. They were just curious. And I've always said any physician, any legitimate credentialed public health official that would like to sit in my office and watch what I do and see the approach I take, if they're interested, they're more than welcome to do that. This is all done, you know, in the right spirit of helping people. This is from the person sent this to me personally, so I will not give their name. I'll simply say they're a medical doctor, board certified, professor of medicine at a major cancer center. We're talking about one of the most respected persons in Orthodox medicine. Quote, Dear Gary, just want to thank you for a wonderful and insightful retreat. For me, the experience was an eye-opener and greatly expanded my knowledge and understanding of the holistic aspects of care for the person. Truly, it is heartening and inspiring to see what else is out there. Seeing what I see in my orthodox and conservative medical world, I do realize that many of our treatment options, and especially chemotherapy, are double-edged swords. There's nothing we give that does not have associated side effects. Your premise that healing should begin at its source, utilizing the life force and spirituality and the energy, is valid and is how healing occurs in the higher consciousness and the higher ages. This is, I've seen, and always with a sense of appreciation, goes on to say, I'm skipping down here. Your retreat most certainly caused me to make a lot of changes in my personal and professional life. Personally, I felt so good after that it was impossible for me not to continue to maintain a vegan lifestyle. I don't eat out anymore except at a vegan restaurant and just invite my friends over and share positive food and great, glorious vegan meals. I no longer drink dark coffee, and so my hot flashes have almost completely resolved, and I no longer have arthritis and musculoskeletal pain. So this is now my approach towards the people under my care. Those that are desirous of following the holistic routine have my complete support, and I'm happy to make referrals for them and follow them with testing and scans, etc., if indicated. To those that are unaware of this option, I do introduce it and take it as far as they have desire to go with it. It does help if I mention to them that I'm working on myself as well. I still have a lot of people, however, who are not interested. I feel that the major hurdle is getting them to stop eating meat. I try to provide them with the best care I can, but this is the reason I don't absolutely refuse to offer them the orthodox options. Having said that, please realize that we do follow up scans, and if there's no improvement or no prohibitive side effects, the treatment is stopped. An individualized approach using all available options, that means orthodox options, that the patient will comply with is my focus. I'm also thrilled with, and I will not mention the person's name, the responses to my patients that are stage 4 terminal. I do always offer them a very valid option. It is my estimation that, I will not name the person, had less than a month to live and has already exceeded that month. Thanks to all your efforts. And she goes on to talk about the medical community from there. So for the cynic or the person who doesn't believe that that people are paying attention, well, they're two orthodox doctors, both respected in their field, who wanted to see for themselves, was this possible? And not only do they now know it's possible, but they're now implementing changes in themselves and hopefully with their patients. So good for them. And this is how change starts. But a person has to come with an open heart, an open mind, and be in the right place at the right time with the right support system and the right ideas, and be the right person. And when those five energies are harmonized, things happen. Take a break. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay with us.
this land of broken dreams. I have visions of many things, but happiness is just an illusion, filled with sadness and confusion. What becomes of the broken hearted who had love that's now departed? I know I've got to find some kind of peace of mind. Maybe
I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting on the road, back in New York in 2 weeks, and then working on a very important feature film, even though we have two brand new films out already this year, and one is really getting noticed out there, and I'm happy about that, Saving the Planet. But one of the things I'm asked is, what about this Bernie Sanders? Well, Richard Gale and myself are preparing a report that we'll offer later this week showing you the good that Bernie has done throughout his career, and he certainly has. Being on the right side of important causes, he absolutely has. But there's a whole part of Bernie that no one's paying attention to, and you should, because that's his unbridled, unconditional support for the military-industrial complex, especially the most expensive weapon system in the history of the world, $1.5 trillion and counting, because it's manufactured in part in his state, and it's a boondoggle, it's a total waste, and also his support for the Israeli government against the Palestinians and his support for Saudi Arabia. I'm going to offer a detailed response to both. But first, let's just take a look at what it means to support Saudi Arabia. Keep in mind that when you hear about all these refugees flooding into Italy and Greece, where are they coming from? They're coming from Tunisia. They're coming from Libya. They're coming from once communities where they had quality of life. And now, no matter what their profession, if they didn't get out before the crisis happens, they have nothing. They have no future. And Saudi Arabia, along with the United States and France, which should surprise no one, and England, have been responsible for the devastation. Even popular programs on Pacifica have supported the invasion of Libya and Syria. ISIS is a creation of the United States and its allies. Anyone who understands the history on the ground knows that. Just as we supported the Mujahideen against the Soviets when the Soviet Union, for over a dozen years, was in control of Afghanistan, or part of Afghanistan. And now, look at the mess. And right now, Saudi Arabia is engaged in the biggest genocide on the planet because they have disrupted and made homeless, or made without water, people without water or food, 26 million Tunisians. 26 million people have no place to go, no food to eat, no water to drink. They're in a war zone. They're being killed by the thousands by Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is demonic. It promotes the most vicious, vile, radicalized, hate-filled form of Islam, Wahhabism. And those are the people that cut people's heads off. Let me just give you an update, and please pass this on to Bernie Sanders. Do you really want to be on the other side of history and supporting one of the most corrupt, vile, genocidal regimes in history? Up to this point, his answer is yes. Well, sooner or later, someone's going to ask Bernie some tough questions. Listen in, please.
One of America's key allies has executed its 100th person this year. And I'm not talking about lethal injections here. Saudi Arabia's preferred method of execution is good old-fashioned beheading. And they're the only country in the world to still use it. In fact, After eclipsing 2014's total of 87, Saudi is on pace to beat its own record of 192 executions in a year. Earlier this year, the government posted an ad for more executioners. Of course, Saudi isn't the only place where death sentences are imposed, nor does it carry out the most executions. That would be China, followed by Iran. And the U.S. is no stranger to the death penalty either. But Saudi Arabia's execution rate per capita is 30 times higher than the U.S. And while the U.S. reserves a death penalty for murder or treason, Saudi Arabia will execute for many non-violent offenses. In fact, almost half of the executions so far in 2015 have been for these crimes, which include drug-related charges, adultery, and sorcery. And the courts that hand down these sentences aren't exactly known for being fair. According to Amnesty International, trials in death penalty cases are often held in secret. Defendants are rarely allowed formal representation by lawyers. They may be convicted solely on the basis of confessions obtained under duress. I'm pretty sure that means torture. And in February this year, a new anti-terrorism law came into effect. The government will consider you a terrorist if you destabilize the security of society or the state, harm the reputation of the state, contact individuals and groups opposed to the kingdom, or call for atheist thought. Those accused of terrorism are tried in a special anti-terrorism court, which hands down death sentences. So are we going to see more job postings for executioners?
And now, I want to play a very short clip. It's only a minute and a half. But this is so reminiscent of what we've been dealing with for the last 40 years nonstop, where good quality independent science and the investigative journalism that goes with it are not supported by the mainstream media or Congress, with rare exceptions, like the Church Committee hearings was one of those exceptions. And this is a group representing the tobacco industry, and here's how they controlled the message that tobacco was not harmful. And as a result, there was no laws written to stop anything being said about why we should smoke. And the AMA had full-page articles with photographs. 44,000 doctors recommend Lucky Strike. It soothes your throat. Think how many people died of emphysema or cancer because they believed their doctor, who believed the Journal of the American Medical Association would never compromise itself, and people believe the tobacco industry. Listen up. It's only a minute and a half. The audio clip, they're having to reload it. While they're reloading that, let's go over and play a clip about the revolt against the ruling class. The biggest political phenomenon of our era is a revolt against the establishment ruling class of America, but the revolt is expressing itself in two fundamentally different ways, and we're going to explore that in just a moment here. Let's just see if we're okay with our audio clip. We'll have this for you in just a second.
Political insiders don't see that the biggest political phenomenon in America today is a revolt against what might be called the ruling class. They're insiders that have dominated Washington for more than three decades, including presidents and congressional leaders from both parties, along with their retinues of policy advisors, political strategists, and spin doctors. The other half of the ruling class are corporate executives, Wall Street chiefs, and multimillionaires and billionaires who have assisted and enabled these political leaders, and for whom the politicians have provided political favors in return. Now, in two very different ways, Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders are agents of this revolt. They are very different. I'll get to the differences in a minute. America has long had a ruling class, but the public was willing to tolerate it during the three decades after World War II, when prosperity was widely shared and when the Soviet Union posed a palpable threat. Then the ruling class seemed benevolent and wise. But in the last three decades, when almost all the nation's economic gains have gone to the top, while the wages of almost everybody else have gone nowhere, the ruling class has seemed to be padding its own pockets at the expense of the rest of America. Look at the polls. In 1964, the vast majority of Americans agreed that government was run for the benefit of all the people. But now almost 80% say it's run by a few big interests looking after themselves, which has made it harder for ordinary people to get ahead. In 2001, a Gallup poll found that 77% of Americans were satisfied with opportunities to get ahead based on hard work. Now, just over half are satisfied. But the revolt against the ruling class is taking two quite different forms. On one side are the wreckers, including Tea Partiers in Congress, wielding the wrecking balls of government shutdowns, threats to default on public debt, gerrymandering, voter suppression through strict ID laws, and outright appeals to racism. Donald Trump is their human wrecking ball. The more outrageous his rants and put-downs of other politicians, the more he rejects political correctness, the more popular he becomes to people thrilled by a bombastic billionaire who seems to be sticking it to the ruling class. On the other side are the rebuilders, the Occupy movement, which, like the Tea Party, emerged from the Wall Street bailout, was intent on rebuilding our political economic system from the ground up. Now, Occupy didn't last, but it put inequality on the map. And the sentiments that fueled Occupy are still boiling. Bernie Sanders personifies them. The more he advocates a fundamental retooling of our economy and democracy in favor of average working people, the more popular he becomes among those who no longer trust the ruling class to bring about necessary change. So the question is, will the revolt against the ruling class prevail? And if so, will it be the wreckers or the rebuilders? Please read Saving Capitalism for the Many, Not the Few, out in September.
And that was Robert Reich, a very nice man. He's in Poverty, Inc., by the way. Went out to California to film him. But here is the other side of Bernie Sanders that he has not talked about nor been challenged on, not looking at what's actually going on the ground in the Palestinian territories. Please listen up.
The United States have a special relationship.
Unprecedented.
So special that Israel gets more than half of all U.S. foreign aid. What kind of aid are we talking about? And more importantly, why does the U.S. keep it flowing? This is The Real Deal on U.S. aid to Israel. Simply put, the U.S. gives Israel money. Lots of it. To be precise, a grand total of $121 billion and counting. And unlike U.S. aid to most other countries, money to Israel is given primarily to its military. Why?
The security of Israel. Preventing a nuclear Iran and ending the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
But it's a military that has been accused of war crimes by the United Nations and called trigger-happy by Amnesty International. No matter. As foreign policy analyst Stephen Walt puts it,
the United States gives Israel generous diplomatic, economic, and military support and does so unconditionally, regardless of what it does.
And the support comes in many forms. First, there's the U.S. budget. Congress gives Israel on average $3 billion a year, $3 billion of U.S. taxpayers' money. Uncle Sam also doles out more aid by funding military research programs. In 2014, $504 million went to joint U.S.-Israeli military research and to the development of anti-rocket defense systems. One of those systems, Iron Dome, has cost the U.S. $720 million, a price tag that is going up as we speak. Then there are the additional multi-million dollar weapons deals. We're talking hundreds of millions of dollars here. And a $1 billion U.S. weapons stockpile that Israel can access in times of emergency. All in all, with the U.S.'s help, Israel has one of the most advanced militaries and is one of the top 10 arms dealers in the world. Guess who's one of its biggest customers? The United States. The relationship is lucrative. As Phyllis Bennis of the Institute for Policy Studies says,
it started in 1967 after the Six-Day War. When the Pentagon initiated a new relationship, the Israeli military was very powerful. The Pentagon looked at them and said, wow, we could do business with these people. And business became the operative term.
What about non-military aid? USAID has given more to Israel than it has to any other country in the Middle East, helping to build libraries, medical centers, and universities. Talk about friends with benefits. The U.S. says that arming Israel helps protect it from Hamas fighters in Gaza, Hezbollah fighters in Lebanon, and of course, Iran. But Hamas has rockets, and Israel has F-16s. And while Iran has no confirmed nuclear warheads, Israel has an estimated 80. So after all the military aid, is Israel really as vulnerable as the U.S. says it is? And is all this money actually helping to end the Israeli-Palestinian conflict? If it were cut, what might change?
Israel might be willing to rethink the occupation, rethink settlement building, and perhaps get more interested in a two-state solution. Right now, they don't have to compromise because they get backing from the United States no matter what they do.
So what do you think? Is this special relationship worth the price?
The ideological and physical hold of American imperial power, buttressed by the utopian ideology of neoliberalism and global capitalism, is unraveling. According to Chris Hedges, most, including many of the elite at the heart of the American empire, recognize that every promise made by the proponents of neoliberalism is a lie. Global wealth, rather than being spread equitably, as neoliberal proponents promised, has been funneled upwards into the hands of a rapacious oligarchical elite, creating vast economic inequality. The working poor, whose unions and rights have been taken from them and whose wages have stagnated or declined over the past 40 years, have been thrust into chronic poverty and underemployment, making their lives one long stress-ridden emergency. The middle class is evaporating. Cities that once manufactured products and offered factory jobs are boarded up wastelands. Prisons are overflowing. Corporations have orchestrated the destruction of trade barriers, allowing them to stash $2.1 trillion in profits in overseas banks to avoid paying taxes. And the neoliberal order, despite its promise to build and spread democracy, has hollowed out democratic systems to turn them into corporate leviathans. Democracy, especially in the United States, is a farce. Vomiting up right-wing demagogues such as Donald Trump, who has a chance to become the Republican presidential nominee and perhaps even president, or slick, dishonest corporate stooges such as Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and if he follows through on his promise to support the Democratic nominee, even Bernie Sanders. The labels liberal and conservative are meaningless in the neoliberal order. Political elites, Democrat or Republican, serve the demands of corporations and empire. They are facilitators, along with most of the media and most of the academia, or what the political philosopher Sheldon Mollen calls our system of inverted totalitarianism. The attraction of a Trump, like the attraction of many who are brutal and buffoonery laden, which is ultimately dangerous, mocks the bankruptcy of the political charade. It lays bare the dissembling, the hypocrisy, the legalized bribery. There's a perverted and, to many, refreshing honesty in this. The Nazis used this tactic to take over power during the Weimar Republic. The Nazis, even in the eyes of their opponents, had the courage of their convictions, however unsavory those convictions were. Those who believe something, even something repugnant, vile, demonic, are often given grudging respect. What a mistake. These neoliberal forces are also rapidly destroying the ecosystem. The Earth has not had this level of climate disruption since 250 million years ago, when it underwent the Permian-Triassic extinction, which wiped out perhaps 90% of all species. This is a percentage we seem determined to replicate. Global warming is unstoppable, with polar ice caps and glaciers rapidly melting and sea levels certain to rise 10 or more feet within the next decade or two. Major flooding coastal cities, mega droughts are leaving huge patches of the earth, including parts of Africa and Australia, the west coast of the United States and Canada, and the southwest United States, parched and plagued by uncontrollable wildfires. We have lost 7.2 million acres to wildfires nationwide this year. And the Forest Service has so far spent $800 million struggling to control the fires in California, Washington, Alaska, and other states. The very word drought is part of the deception, implying that this is somehow reversible. It isn't. Migrants fleeing violence and hunger in countries like Syria and Iraq and Afghanistan and Libya, as I mentioned earlier, are pouring into Europe. 200,000 of the roughly 300,000 migrants to Europe this year have landed on the shores of Greece. 2,500 have died. That's just this year, in the sea, and overcrowding and dilapidated boats were in the backs of trucks, such as the one discovered last week in Austria, that had 71 corpses, including the bodies of children. This is the largest influx of refugees into Europe since World War II, a 40% jump over last year, and the flood will grow even greater. By 2050, many climate scientists predict over 200 million climate refugees will have fled northward to escape areas of the globe made uninhabitable by soaring temperatures and droughts and famines and plagues and coastal flooding and the chaos of failed states. The physical, environmental, and social political disintegration is reflected in an upsurge of nihilistic violence driven by rage. Crazed gunmen carry out massacres in shopping malls, movie theaters, churches, and schools in the United States. Boko Haram and Islamic State and ISIS are on a killing rampage. Suicide attackers methodically commit deadly mayhem in Iraq, Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia, Syria, Lebanon, Algeria, Israel, and the Palestinian territories, Iran, Tunisia, Lebanon, Morocco, Turkey, Mauritania, Indonesia, Sri Lanka, China, Nigeria, Russia, India, Pakistan. They struck the United States September 11, 2001, and in 2010 when Andrew Joseph Stack III flew a light plane into a building in Austin, Texas that housed offices of the Internal Revenue Service. Fanaticism is bred by hopelessness and despair. It is not the product of religion, although religion often becomes the veneer for violence. The more desperate people become, the more this nihilistic violence will spread. Well, what do we do? These morbid symptoms will expand until we radically reconfigure how we relate to each other and the ecosystem. But there's no guarantee such a reconfiguration is possible, especially if the elites manage to cling to power through their pervasive global security and surveillance apparatus and heavily militarized police forces. If we do not stand up and challenge the neoliberal system, we will then end up creating our own Hobbesian nightmare of escalating state violence and counter-violence. Masses of the poor will be condemned to misery and death. Some will try to be violent. That is a mistake. The tiny elite living in a modern version of Versailles or the Forbidden City will have access to amenities denied to everyone else. Hatred will become the primary ideology. So let us think and think well about what we should be doing at this time. How about starting by changing our own perceptions of our own lack of power? Start to get away from television and computers and look at the real world and see what we as individuals can do to harmonize our energies with those who have less than we and share some of the gifts of our life with them. And then let them know that nothing good comes from destroying, but rather creating positive solutions. And one of those could be pull away your power from these people. Get your money out of their banks. Don't watch their radio or television programs or read their magazines. Get off their internet. Tear up their credit cards. Don't shop in their stores. Support that which supports you and the world and nature. Stop eating meat and drinking dairy and eating their processed sugars. These are all things within our power. And don't vote Democrat or Republican. Vote for a qualified, populist, third-party, independent candidates. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.
Say it's all right.
It's all right.
It's all right.